In Juneau, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. Juneau's local election ends tomorrow. Early voting has been going on since registered voters received ballot packets in the mail in mid-September. As of Thursday, about a quarter of those ballots had already been returned. Ballot envelopes must be postmarked by Tuesday for the vote to count. Voters also have until 8 p.m. to vote in person at City Hall or the Mendenhall Valley Public Library. They can also drop off completed ballots there or in one of the drop boxes at Stater Harbor or the Douglas Library. If your ballot never arrived or you need a new one, you can visit the vote centers to get a replacement. For more information about this year's local election and the candidates running, visit ktoo.org/elections. Governor Mike Dunleavy declared a public health disaster emergency before Alaska's first case of COVID-19 was detected, but the declaration is scheduled to expire on November 15th. As KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports, with case counts rising significantly in Alaska, hospitals are concerned about what comes next.
On March 11th, Governor Dunleavy was at the beginning of months of nearly daily news conferences, but the briefing on that day was particularly noteworthy.
Just a few moments ago, I signed a declaration of emergency to free up resources for Alaska.
The declaration began a period in which Dunleavy's administration issued 18 different mandates that affected how people could travel into and out of the state, or even whether they could be within 6 feet of others outside their households. All but five of those mandates have expired or been rescinded. The most noteworthy mandate still in place requires those coming from elsewhere to have a negative coronavirus test within 72 hours of departure. Without that mandate, Alaska could lose the advantage it's had of being geographically separated. Alaska's hospitals and nursing homes are among those trying to understand what would happen if the disaster declaration expires next month.
This is the issue that is now popping up to top of mind and understanding the impact.
That's Jared Kosin, the president of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. He says the federal government has waived some regulations that have allowed providers to be more flexible in offering telehealth, ordering coronavirus testing, and licensing out-of-state nurses and other providers. These waivers depend on the state response to the pandemic being consistent with the federal response, and it's not clear to hospitals and nursing homes if that will be the case if the disaster declaration expires.
We're still seeing really high case counts. Thankfully, we're all still managing it, but we're also entering in with a lot of unknowns. And I think we're just concerned that a lot of the tools we all have been using could go away. And I don't think anyone has ill intent. I think we just don't truly understand what the impact would be.
He says providers also are concerned that the federal government may not consider Alaska to be eligible for federal relief payments if the disaster declaration expires. Kosin says he and hospital leaders are looking for clarity and will be talking more with Dunleavy's administration about it. State Health and Social Services Commissioner Adam Crum laid out the administration's thinking on the issue in a recent town hall. He described how the state has helped guide local communities on what they can do in response to the pandemic, rather than rely on the state mandates.
The governor asked us and advised us that we were to remove any of these mandates as soon as possible.
The legal basis for the last five mandates is set to expire on November 15th. These mandates regulate commercial fishing, services by healthcare providers, the quarantine and isolation program for first responders, healthcare providers, and homeless people, and travel. Under Alaska law, a governor can only declare a disaster for 30 days without the legislature extending it. The legislature passed a bill on March 29th, extending Dunleavy's declaration until November 15th. Legislative leaders say the votes aren't there to hold a special session to extend the declaration. Senate President Kathy Geisel, an Anchorage Republican, says she's not concerned about the state's powers expiring. She says community public health efforts are more important.
We have some good, functional logistics in place now in the state. Communities are very nimble in recognizing when they need to shut down. I'm thinking now of our rural communities who have historic trauma from these kinds of pandemics, and the city of Anchorage.
There are limits to how much some communities can protect themselves without help from the state. For example, some communities don't have local governments. And while Acting Attorney General Ed Sniffen says home rule municipalities have the legal authority to impose their own restrictions, he says other kinds of local governments don't.
Now, there are other communities who may not have that kind of a charter or those ordinances in place. And if their authority springs from the governor's disaster declaration, then when the governor's disaster declaration ends, their authority would also end.
In a response to a question about how Governor Dunleavy is approaching the end of the declaration, his office emailed a one-sentence statement saying the governor is taking into consideration all options when it comes to the emergency declaration. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The group tasked with reshaping the future of the state-run ferry system is recommending the creation of an executive board, fewer vessels, and at least 2 years of forward funding for the cash-strapped ferries. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the Alaska Marine Highway Reshaping Work Group wrapped up 8 months of work this month and has forwarded its ideas to the governor's office.
Tom Barrett, a retired Coast Guard admiral and pipeline services executive, chaired the group's 30-odd video conference meetings. He told the work group at its final one that the group's recommendations should be taken as outside advice.
I've got no direction, steering, or limits suggested by anybody in the administration. So it's our report. People can like it, dislike it, adopt recommendations or not. Some of the changes we're recommending are hard and will require a fair amount of work to actually make happen.
Governor Mike Dunleavy created the nine-person panel to evaluate the $250,000 ferry study prepared by Northern Economics last year. It did that and more, including endorsing the creation of a Marine Highway Executive Board to steer operations and long-term planning. The work group also recommends reducing the size of the fleet. Barrett pointed to laid-up vessels, including the two fast ferries and the Malaspina, which are moored in Ward Cove at the system's expense.
It costs $170,000 a month to keep at the dock, and they're never coming back in the system. And literally, you may have to give them away.
The group didn't reach consensus on every issue. Some wanted language endorsing progress on replacing the Tustamina, a federally funded project on hold until 2023. Tony Johansson, a road contractor from Fairbanks, has maintained it's too expensive. He recommended scrapping service to southwestern Alaska, where airplanes can take people and barges can carry freight.
But you surely don't build a huge vessel that's going to cost a fortune to run for a system that it's on its deathbed unless it gets more money out of the state system.
That raised the hackles of Kodiak Republican Representative Louise Stutes.
You know, to just excuse me for interrupting, but my blood is boiling here, because to just arbitrarily tell a good portion of coastal Alaska, well, sorry, folks, you're done. It just rubs me the wrong way. It is treating Alaskans poorly.
It remains unclear whether the Tustamina replacement project was addressed in the group's final draft. It did recommend fewer sailings across the system, fewer communities served, ways to increase road access to coastal communities, and to find ways to reduce personnel costs. Representing the Marine Highways ferry workers was Ben Goldrich of the Marine Engineers Union. He pushed back on wages being a target for cuts. He suggested more effort to cut waste in procurement, repairs, and maintenance in outsourcing.
You know, we work in a capitalist system. Every time a part's ordered, somebody's trying to get a piece of the action. And that is a place where they can reduce costs by involving the crews more. Yeah. And that's the way it used to be.
Other recommendations, including asking the legislature to provide forward funding for at least 2 years, allowing the Marine Highway to plan and create schedules 12 to 18 months in advance. Other recommendations include constructing a new ferry terminal at Juneau's Cascade Point that would shave 2 hours of travel time on runs up Lynn Canal, allowing day boats to complete the round-trip voyage between Juneau, Haines, and Skagway within a 12-hour window. DOT spokesman Andy Mills confirmed that the document has arrived in the governor's office, but said it won't be publicly released until agency staff has a chance to digest it and prepare its own implementation plans.
So within the next 2 weeks, it's our plan to have those discussions and to have at least the initial outline of what recommendations we can act upon in the near and then maybe the long term, have that sketched out as well.
The work group recommends the agency adopt a long-term plan for the ferry system and to create a 3-member transition team to work within the agency to implement changes in the near future. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
I'm Pablo Peña, and this is KTOO News.